Miss Kara, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
I'm excited too. I don't know why I called you Miss Kara. I don't think I've ever said that to anyone before, but it's fun to have you, Kara. It's been fun to follow you for a long time.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a conversation today in person. There's a common kind of like thread with my podcast guests, having somebody on who I admire, who's somewhat of an expert in certain areas that I might not be, or maybe there's a lot of overlap in our messages and I want to talk about certain topics with them. Or talking about topics I don't have the same amount of confidence talking about. And you cross off a lot of those boxes, and you're somebody who I've followed and have admired from a distance for a long time. So I'm happy we get to share some space today and have a good conversation. So thanks for coming on.
Of course. Me too. Me too. I'm super excited. And it's always really great to be able to chat with the people that you're constantly liking their content and messaging on Instagram, whatever it may be. It's always great to have that connection. So we love it.
Totally. Yeah. I've had a bad habit recently, which is for my podcast guests, putting a topic outline that is going to far exceed the time allotment that I have to speak with them. And I'm looking at this list here. And when I sent it to you, I've done this with, I had a guest on Tony and Dr. Jesse and even Dana, like the last three or four podcast guests. I think I've said the same thing to them before I even hit record today, especially. We're going to do our best. I'll do my best to keep us on track. If we go on side tangents, great. But today is really important. And this is, again, this is not necessarily my area of expertise, and you have a ton of personal experience, both professionally and personally, in this stuff. And I'm really excited for today. But again, just a little asterisk here, like we might not get through everything, but I'm just laughing my ass off over here, looking at like all the things that quite frankly could probably be an hour long podcast episode on each individual subtext here.
100%. I'm laughing, looking at my notes, because I'm like, but you know, it also helps too, as somebody who is also a podcaster, it helps to know how to keep things concise and know exactly what we really should hit on, you know? So I think we'll do a good job, as good as we can.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I'm excited. I'm curious. I'm virtually meeting you for the first time right now. And I feel like I know a decent amount about you, but for the person who doesn't, or the person who is hearing Kara for the first time, do kind of your little podcast intro, your journey, your things, because I think that really sets the scene for a lot of stuff that we might talk about today. But give us your little personal journey, fitness, you know, body comp, you know, your own health pursuits, just if and how everything ties in with each other. And selfishly, I want to hear the story as well. So do your thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so funny, because I always say it's so hard, and I'm sure you feel this way, to give an abridged version of what got us to the point that we're at today, right? But long story short, you know, I started to fall in love with quote unquote fitness whenever I was a very young age, honestly, around 7th to 8th grade. I had a family member call me fat, and that kind of spiraled into never ending trauma about nutrition and fitness, you know? And so things that we have worked through today. But, you know, I started running on the treadmill whenever I was 13, listening to my Hannah Montana CD, and it just kind of, you know, spiraled from there. I tried every fad diet under the sun in high school and even in college to become a dietitian. I remember working out, you know, going to the gym twice per day. I remember cutting my carbs to 80 grams. And I just remember feeling like, man, like something I am doing is not right. Like I was all over. I had started to dabble into the, you know, if it fits your macros community. I was all over bodybuilding.com, all of the things. Like I really feel like I was in, like, you know, 2013 to 2017, like peak fitness era. It was so much fun at the same time. But, you know, during my dietetic internship, I started really, really struggling with binge eating due to restriction, due to constantly trying to chase a smaller body and fat loss. And so that led me into binge eating. And that also led me to hiring my very first health and fitness coach. And that coach honestly changed the entire trajectory of where I thought I was going with my career. I knew that I was going to become a dietitian. I personally, which I feel like all of us as dietitians go through this at one point. I don't know if you felt the same, but I wanted to be a sports RD. I was like, I'm going to be, you know, with the Steelers or with the Pirates or whatever it may be. I'm from Pittsburgh, PA. So You know, I was like, I'm going to be working with sports teams. But, you know, as I started working with my health and fitness coach, I really realized that I wanted to make so much of a bigger impact. And I wanted to really, really be able to change lives. And I knew that the only way that I could do that was by working with people one-on-one. And so that kind of led me into starting my own business. And so, my professional spiel is that, yes, I am a registered dietitian. I call myself a functional registered dietitian. I have years upon years of functional health mentorship courses under my belt. I'm also a certified personal trainer as well. Have my master's in nutrition, and I also am currently working toward becoming an integrative and functional nutrition practitioner. So lots of different things there, but I really started my business out focusing primarily on like macros, body composition, fat loss, muscle growth, all of that good stuff, as many of us do. And it's still something that I really focus on in my practice today. But as I worked with my own health and fitness coach and I started to get really comfortable in the gym, lifting weights, I started to lose weight. I started to actually realize, holy crap, I can eat a lot more than I realized and started to feel my body properly. My passion really, really just kind of soared from there. And around 2021, I was starting to dabble more in the functional health and women's health space. And I decided to come off of hormonal birth control for my own reasons, just because I really wanted to see what my body would do. And I really wanted to get a regular cycle without having synthetic hormones in the mix. So I came off, unbeknownst to me, that it would literally lead to a 4-year journey that has been absolutely wild, leading to a 30-pound weight gain, leading to hormonal imbalances that I never experienced in my life, low progesterone, estrogen dominance, hormonal symptoms like insomnia, terrible headaches, low libido. And that period of time coming off of birth control, and also the biggest issue that, quite frankly, I'm sure we'll talk about, but has still been something that I am continuing to get a grasp on and regulate to this day, was a completely missing period and irregular cycles after coming off of birth control. But that during that period, that really pushed me into my love of there is so much more than just food and fitness to this journey. And that really pushed me into my love of women's health and the functional and holistic space. And it also really pushed me into understanding how much my love for myself and my mindset and my acceptance of my body actually tied into me getting the results that I wanted. So through all of that, I ended up losing the weight that I gained. I ended up getting a period back. But it's a little bit of like a, we can kind of chat about it here, I'm sure, like once we dive into like the post-birth control period. But it's been a little bit of a roller coaster of a journey, because as I started to lose the weight that I gained post-birth control, my period started to fluctuate again, which is something that we'll talk about, how calorie intake really impacts your cycle as a woman. So yeah, that's really kind of like what has gotten me to the point I'm at today. And now I work with women of all sorts who deal with tons of, functional health issues, whether it be PCOS, insulin resistance, Hashimoto's, infertility, endometriosis, hypothyroidism, you name it, So I love what I do so much, and I love helping women get to the root, and oftentimes helping them realize that a lot of the root is like up here in our mindset as well.
Yeah,
So
thank
I'd
you
say
for
that's
that.
the abridged version.
Yeah, and there's only so much abbreviations you can kind of do with some of these intros. It's funny, I think 2 days ago, as we sit here today, was National, RD Day, Registered Dietitian Day. I saw your post or kind of your, carousel of photos and stuff. I was like, I got to do that too, because it's, it's been almost a decade, getting up until this point, or more, honestly. I think for you and I, just looking back in the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years, it's all been leading us up to this moment right here. So it's kind of fun to reflect on that. And that was a perfect opportunity. But I appreciated yours because, yeah, you look back at photos of yourself and you think about what life was like at that moment. And every year, I know everybody listening to this can identify, whether it was a year ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago, the person that we're looking at There's similarities for sure, but it's very different. There's very different circumstances, very different health. There's very different types of priorities. There's very different goals and expectations. And it's fascinating to look back, and try and connect the dots looking backwards sometimes. But when you actually can objectively look at all the things and all the steps that you've taken up until this point, that's when we can appreciate gratitude a little bit more. And we can, you can give yourself a little bit of flowers because you, myself, anyone listening to this, like, there's been a lot of growth that's happened. Even if people are struggling today, everyone is struggling today. We all still deal with our own shit. We're never perfect, but there's still a lot of growth along the way. And I think it's easy to reflect back on that. So like doing a podcast intro or posting a handful of photos on Instagram, it's nice to be able to appreciate some of the places that you've been. 'Cause yeah, you wouldn't be the person today without that shit.
Right, 100%. And I always say, like, people always ask me, because I you probably get asked this a lot as well, but I get asked a lot, like, what do I need to do what you do? And I say, here's the thing. There is something to be said about getting the credentials, doing the schooling, doing the coursework, right? But you have to have the experience. You also have to have the empathy to lead people in the way that they need to be led, honestly. And a lot of that comes with our own personal experience. So it's so massive.
It is. Yeah. And I've been really fascinated with women's health as well. I think it's something that has gained more attention in the space recently. And we have more people shifting their niche to that or people doubling down on that. I think all of that is phenomenal and it should be that way. That has come, maybe some misinformation or extrapolation of stuff that may or may not be true or on the list of things that people should be focusing on. So it is a slippery slope, but I think the acknowledgement that women are different than men has been so important. And especially coming from a male myself and working with predominantly women too, like I work with a lot of men as well, but women are not just little mini men that we just assume everything else works the same. And from your history, from the psychology piece that you acknowledge, from the hormonal aspect, from just the different type of food landscape we live in, it's going to be very different from males to females. And I think that acknowledging all of that is a good start to the conversation, and it helps us appreciate all the other inputs that, might be different from Akira's experience versus my lived experience. But it's helpful to kind of relive some of our own journeys. And I appreciate you sharing yours and being open and honest about that, because it can be difficult to talk about. But I know for everyone listening to this, there's 10 women out there that have gone through or will go through or will experience similar, if not, very similar things as you've experienced, up until this point as well.
For sure, for sure. I totally agree with you on that.
Can we take a step back and, we mentioned the birth control. This is the route we're going to go in today as well, and kind of shift our conversation around that and, how to come off it and what considerations we have. But I think before we get there, kind of laying the framework and talking about what types of birth control there are, we might start that. Just talking about things that can get people up to speed if they're not familiar with what the types are out there, or if you're a male listening to this, you're like, oh shit, like you're telling me there's just more things than a condom, huh? Like, of course, I've been living under a rock. But just being able to be on the same page before we talk about, transitions off or different seasons of life during or after that phase, I think could be helpful. But even before that, with your own experience, what was the reason and what was the memory you have starting birth control? What was it? What was the conversation like? What was the decision-making process around that, if you don't mind me asking? And how do you remember that? And is that something you think is similar to other people, or does everyone kind of have their own individual experience with that?
So starting birth control, I specifically remember. So I was 17 years old whenever I went on it. I was 25 when I came off. So I was on it for 8 years. And I specifically went on it because I thought I was going to be sexually active. And so actually, like, didn't end up becoming sexually active for a couple of years later. So I kind of kick myself now, but you don't know better at age 17. And also, my mom did not know better either. And I think, and I do wonder, I was having this conversation with my mentor the other day. I do wonder how different that will be as now, as younger millennials, we now know all of the implications of birth control and what that will look like for our own daughters in the future, right? I think that that's a really interesting conversation. But for me, it was simply because of that. And now I think that this is a really important part of the puzzle to address that I had very regular periods prior to going on birth control. So I think that there's this notion that while, yes, absolutely, if you go on, which we'll kind of talk about here, but if you go on hormonal birth control to quote unquote fix irregular periods, painful symptoms, blah, blah, blah. Those can very likely come back when you get off of birth control, right? But I know so many women who went on birth control and they're like, I had none of that. And I came off of birth control and I started to experience all of that. And I had never experienced that in my life. I think something else that's really frustrating is that I don't really have a baseline of where my hormone levels were at beforehand because I wasn't getting my progesterone tested at 17. I didn't even know what that was. You know? So that was really my main reason for going on it. And honestly, I think it is for many, teenagers and young women and young adults probably is their primary reason, or it is often prescribed as a, quote unquote solution for things like, painful periods, hormonal symptoms, PCOS, all of that kind of stuff.
For sure, for sure. And I think, again, it was kind of a leading question because everyone's going to have their own experience and reasons and starting points for taking some of these things. But I find that there's a shared experience with everyone, and everyone has their own reaction or, reasons or how they started things and how they experienced that. And again, eventually, if and when they come off of that, what that experience is like as well. I know my wife, we've talked about this before, but she started when she was like 14 years old, I think, for the reason of 13 or 14, for the reason of got her cycle super irregular, very heavy, very a lot of discomfort associated with that. Doctors at the time were just like, yeah, just start this and you expect it on the dot every single month. And again, I think there were pros potentially to that decision that was made, but I know that a lot of people share that experience where they start very young and it's just kind of looked as this solution end all be all type of approach. And I think one thing we're appreciating now is that maybe that's not the first line of defense for some people. It's always going to be something that has a place, but it's very fascinating to see what starting points and for what reasons women start this, because it is going to differ heavily from person to person.
For sure, for sure. And I think, that's one of the very first points like I have in my notes is that whenever doctors are prescribing hormonal birth control as, kind of like this fix for these irregular, heavy, painful periods, we have to remember and understand that whenever you are on hormonal birth control, that is not a real period. And I honestly, like, that was a really big reason that pushed me to come off of birth control because I was like, what? When I learned that, and I was 23, 24 when I learned that. I did not know that is simply a withdrawal bleed, right? That is not, that bleed is not the outcome of the cycling of your hormones throughout the month. And that really just did not sit with me well. I was like, man, I want a regular period. Like I want a period on my own and I want to know that my body can do that, So that was a really big, really, really big push for me.
Totally. Can you briefly describe, if someone is on hormonal birth control, looking at the different phases of the menstrual cycle, the timeline with that? You mentioned that it's kind of like an artificial, type of menstruation at some capacity. What when you start birth control, for the people who might not even be familiar with that, they're taking birth control, they've always taken it, but they don't actually know what's maybe happening and what hormones might be fluctuating. Is there a brief overview that you might be like, oh yeah, at this time this happens, this time this happens, and this medication is helping in these ways? What would you say to somebody who maybe isn't familiar with that process at all?
Well, I think that this can really tie into like some of the different types of birth controls as well because we have a lot, right? Like we have combination pills, we have mini pills, we have implants, injections, we have IUDs, all of these different types of things. Now, one, like they are typically going to provide us with one or the other. They're either going to provide us with a combination of synthetic hormones. Typically, like one of the most popular is the combination pill. So a lot of times it is a combined progestin, which is a synthetic form of progesterone, and then ethanol estradiol, which is a synthetic form of estrogen. And so with our combined pills and the combination of those hormones also are similar to like the NuvaRing, also also the patches, like those are some items that have those combined pills. What I really like to say is, you know, we see these shifts in hormones over the cycle, right? Like we start to see estrogen rise a little bit more toward the end of that follicular phase and closer to ovulation. We start to see progesterone rise a bit more closer to the end of that luteal phase. Whenever you are on birth control, it's kind of like hormones are like flatline, right? We're not really seeing those shifts, those highs, those lows. And so that is also a really big reason why at times it can be warranted for some women who really, really do need the help whenever it comes to, you know, those hormonal symptoms, painful periods. But also we have to understand it is not getting to the root cause and it is not fixing the issue. So that's kind of how I would explain it. Now, we do have some other forms of birth control that are just like progestin only and everything of that sort. But whenever you have a form of these synthetic hormones in the mix, we are basically suppressing the communication from our brain to our ovaries. So we are telling the body, hey, we're not ovulating. We are thinning like the cervical mucus. We're making it harder for the body, obviously, to get pregnant, right? Now, I will say that with something like a hormonal IUD, I would say if somebody is going the hormonal route, the IUD is typically what I recommend because the IUD suppresses, I believe it suppresses ovulation in about 85% of cycles the first year, but then afterward it's only about 15% of cycles. So it impacts ovulation a little bit less. But it does impact like cervical mucus and it inhibits sperm survival and everything of that sort. So that's kind of how it's acting on preventing pregnancy for us. But yeah, I would say it's kind of like a flat line more than anything. And that's why it's so funny to me to look back at myself, at like my 20-year-old self on birth control. When I tell you, I could maintain a small, like a smaller size. I feel like I was so much more level and I didn't like feel a lot of the things that I feel now. And it makes sense, you know, because I really didn't have a lot of those hormonal shifts.
Totally, totally. Thank you for that. That's very detailed. And I think that's why I wanted to have you on the show is because you can outline how many different inputs and how many different options and all the differences and a lot of these things that are existing on the market today that, quite frankly, are continuing to expand the day, you know, the years that we exist here today compared to maybe what you were offered when you started when you were 17 years old or what my wife was offered when she was 13 back in 2000, whatever, you know. So this is always going to be evolving, you know, the goalposts are always going to be kind of, you know, moving in different directions and we're going to be finding out things more like you alluded to. We're seeing maybe some of the side effects or symptoms or things that we couldn't really study or see long-term outcome data on when these things were approved for use, you know, back when these things started to become a little bit more popular. But that's the beautiful part of, you know, sometimes time and being able to be, being able to be exposed to a lot of these things so we can continue to make informed decisions going forward. Cause that's really at the end of the day, what I want to do who listen to my podcast. I know that's what you want people to do as well. And I think when we look at something like starting birth control, it's a very big decision. There's a lot of different inputs that go into that decision. And not to put you on the spot here, but one question I just thought of is if you have somebody here who is, you know, maybe in their teenage years and they're thinking there's a mom listening and, you know, their daughters are kind of around that age where they might start to see, you know, these things start to change. And there is a conversation around, hey, do we or do we not start birth control? If that is the conclusion that, you know, the daughter and the mom and the doctor, everyone kind of provides, like, how would you give advice on how somebody could be an informed decision maker? Because I think what I've seen personally, and again, my own experiences, people go to the doctor, the doctor has their preference or what they know the most about or what funding that, you know, not to say it's a funding thing, but what resources they have available to them. And it's pushed on you without being able to make all of these decisions. So besides listening to this podcast, what are some things on or recommendations on how you could help that mom or that daughter be an informed decision maker when it comes to making a big decision like this? Because it really is, can be a life-changing decision in a lot of contexts.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good question. And I think one of the biggest things is And I say this as a caution because a lot of the really, really helpful books that like I have read and that I've recommended to clients, they are a little bit more about like the implications of the pill. And they frame hormonal birth control in a little bit more of a negative light, which understandably so. But I do think it's really helpful to know and understand all of the different forms and types of birth control. The one book that I will say that absolutely changed my life is, I have it right here beside me. It's the Period Repair Manual by Dr. Lara Brighton. And so this book basically goes through literally every single type of birth control. She classifies them as, I believe, like type one and type two, like hormonal birth controls, copper IUD. Obviously, she goes into like fertility awareness method, all of that kind of stuff. So I think that that would be a really helpful resource to start. I also think I can't give you the name, like the name of a website off the top of my mind, but I know that there are specific, like government and women's health websites out there as well that will break down the kind of like pros and cons of each type of birth control, right? And I would also say, like, don't be afraid to talk to multiple providers. I know it can be a frustrating process, but you really want to find somebody who actually hears you out and listens to you and gives you all of your options rather than just being like, you need a patch or you need a pill. Or I will be honest with you, I have so many friends who were told that their only option was the Depo Provera shot. And I mean, it's so funny because I feel like even like as a guy, you probably know what the Depo shot is. Like one of the literal like worst, in my opinion, and in many's worst forms of birth control that you could get on. And it's like you just feel really helpless at that time, you know? So I would say also don't be afraid to talk to multiple providers and find one who actually hears you and gives you multiple options and educates you on them, you know, and gives you the risks because a lot of people don't, which is really frustrating.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I think that is what I wanted people to hear is this idea that you are not locked into one option and one only option. And
No.
that's the thing that you have to take. And I will link those resources in the show notes, that book and that website as well,
Yeah.
so people can access that there. But this whole idea of like being an advocate for yourself or your daughter or the people in your life, nobody is going to do that shit for you. And unfortunately, we do have a healthcare system that can, not in every context, but that can, how do I want to say this? That can just like not put you as a priority and kind of blanket you in with the general masses when this really does need to
Absolutely.
be individualized and something that's taken very seriously. And I do think a lot of providers do that, but nobody's going to be an advocate for you, especially with these things. And practicing this now when your daughter's 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, it's only going to make it easier when you have to do that for yourself or your other family members or other people in your life. So, being an advocate, doing a little like trial and error with who and what providers you want to kind of, connect with and to see what is available to you instead of just going one and done, see the provider, you see them for 15, 20 minutes, they hear your symptoms, they make a recommendation, and then you're out the door. That I think is the approach that a lot of people can experience, and that's what we're trying to get away from. And it's going to take effort to do things different this time of the or this time in our lives.
Absolutely. And I also will say, just on that note, that, don't speak up, even if your voice shakes, even if you're nervous, even if you're anxious. As somebody who has years and years of functional health and women's health experience, and as a dietitian, I even got nervous going into my OB and saying, listen, I know my shit. I know what's going on with my body, and this is what I need. And these are the tests that I need from you. I actually went and got an ovarian ultrasound a couple of months ago, and I was really nervous to ask for it, you know? So even as somebody who has a lot of experience in knowing what to ask for, like it's gonna take a while for you to be confident in being an advocate for yourself, but do it even if it feels sticky and awkward, you gotta do it anyways.
Yep, absolutely. My wife and I had a experience recently. She's pregnant. When we were first going and doing ultrasounds and doing all the regular routine work, we had a doctor at an OBGYN clinic, and it was a recommendation. Great, recommendation. These things that you just go, but you realize that yeah, maybe this isn't the provider for us. And there were things that we felt like we didn't get our needs met in certain stuff, which hardest decision, the hardest thing I've seen my wife ever do, honestly, is like try to change provider offices and doctors. And there's a lot of logistical issues from an insurance standpoint from us since we pay
It's a whole
privately.
headache.
And all to say, the list of cons in terms of changing versus just settling and just accepting it is what it is, that was not justified in the cons list of us going through the process of finding somebody else that we connected with was very daunting. But I'll tell you what, it was the best decision we've ever made. And I can't imagine our lives sticking or doing things that, we were kind of funneled into at this one point. And everything has been different up until this point. And I know things will be different come birth time and finding pediatrics. But that experience has led us to looking for different, pediatric doctors that we could take our daughter to, and going to all these different resources. And it's just we're being more of an informed decision kind of makers as a couple here. And I think that that is priceless when it comes to being parents, when it comes to taking care of yourself. But again, it's not going to come easy. It's not intuitive for most people, and it's just something that you got to kind of embrace the suck as that, comes your way in these moments.
Yep, that's the perfect way to put it for sure.
While we're on this topic, when it comes to coming or starting birth control, is there advice you would give your younger self? I guess we could frame this question on what you could or should be doing in addition to that from a nutrition, lifestyle, habit base. Like what are things that we should be focusing on or parents can focus on with their daughters as they start some of these pharmaceutical treatments and options. Or is it as simple as, okay, you're on the pill, you're good to go. See you next year kind of thing. Like what, from a nutrition standpoint, do we have to consider and remember when we're starting these things to maybe make this process more smooth for people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the things to consider are also the things that you need to consider prior to coming off and like prepping your body for coming off as well. So these things will kind of go hand in hand. But now thinking of it from the points of like a mom listening for their daughter or whatever it may be. So I kind of have like five pillars that I always talk to my clients about. And so if we're speaking about, one of those main pillars, that's going to be nutrition, right? So we're thinking diet quality and we are thinking calorie quantity as well. So I will say that one of the biggest mistakes that I made prior to coming off of birth control. And again, this is going to look a little different because I was older, right? I was in control of my own nutrition. But I was in a calorie deficit and I was dieting. I was eating pretty dang low. Like I'm a small girly, I'm 5 foot. And so my calories do typically have to go get pretty low whenever I'm losing body fat. I was eating pretty dang low calories whenever I came off of birth control. And so I think one of the biggest things is number one, just making sure that we are fueling our body properly. And this is going to look so different for every single person, whether, obviously they're a teenager, a young woman, adult, whatever it may be, how athletic they are, active, lifestyle, stress. All of that kind of stuff, their body composition. But I think just really the basics, ensuring that at least we are having, three balanced meals a day. We are focusing on, we're not fearing carbs. We're focusing on fibrous carbohydrate intake. We are focusing on eating, 14 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories consumed. Dietary fat is going to be massive. And I do kind of have like some guidelines in terms of grams for grown adult women of like what I see in my practice, especially when coming off of birth control. But I would say like having a source of healthy fat with each meal. So whether that be, nuts, seeds, flax seeds, chia seeds, olive oil, avocado, nut butters, whatever it may be. Healthy dietary fat is going to be so, so important because we know that fats are the building blocks for our steroid hormones, which are going to be our sex hormones, things like testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, right? So that's really important. Of course, protein, right? So protein is going to be so, so, so important for not only obviously muscle maintenance, but also muscle growth. And of course, as young girls, I'm sure that most of us weren't eating enough protein, So that is going to be so, so huge. I'm typically, recommending anywhere from 3 to 4 ounces per meal. Maybe like 2 to 3 ounces with a snack. And also color, fiber variety, fruit, veggie, gonna be so important. And thinking about diversity through our fruits and veggies is really important because we also know that the pill is going to impact our liver health and our gut microbiome as well. So the more that we can really focus on like that diversity, to feed those good gut bugs in the gut and also those omega-3s to really support the gut lining, that's going to be so huge. Even some like probiotic rich foods, right? Things like kimchi, things like sauerkraut, Greek yogurt, those are going to be great to have in the diet. So if I'm thinking of like, yes, a mom looking at her daughter, those would be some really big things that I would focus in on and just really making sure that we are not underfueling, you know? And it's not that, you know, your 15-year-old daughter is going to have to track her macros or count her calories, right? But I would say three balanced meals per day, one to two snacks at least, I think is a really good place to start.
Agreed. And it's funny, like someone listens to that and they're like, oh yeah, that's shit I kind of already knew, where it's like, oh,
That's pretty
that's
basic,
how
right?
basic, like, oh no, we gotta be fasting and do keto, right? And like, that's the thing that's gonna make us healthier. And I find that those recommendations, especially for growing teenagers, females, especially people, our kids going through puberty, the recommendations we would give to them are recommendations we need to take ourselves a lot of
Oh
times.
my gosh,
Or
yeah.
as parents or as adults, it's like, yeah, you're not in your head along. It's like, yeah, I should probably get protein, should probably have a diverse amount of nutrients and fiber sources, should probably incorporate carbs because one, they give us energy and I feel better when I'm with them. But if I deprive myself from them, I'm maybe more likely to binge or have a negative relationship with that. Fat sources, like incorporating those within meals and cooking with them, like those are all things that again are kind of these quote unquote basics, but people don't do that very well.
They
And
don't.
I find that parents especially, I feel like we're talking to parents a lot right now and moms and dads, but when you have your shit figured out or when you can start to implement some of these things for yourself, it becomes more effortless for your teenager or for your kids or for the people around you. And it's not going to be perfect. People can only observe and do things so much, especially teenage years. People, we all kind of went through that rebellion age maybe at one point. And like, there's kids like we're talking about, like, they go to school and they don't have any breakfast at all. And then their friends are going to Taco Bell for lunch. And then they come home
Hot
and they have
Cheetos and
volleyball
Mountain Dew for
practice. Yeah.
lunch.
They walk to the convenience store. Then they have volleyball practice from 3:30 to 5:30. And then they come home or they have pizza that night. It's like, for everybody, like you said, and I thought you said it so eloquently, is like everyone's situation is going to be different. And we take these blanket recommendations and we start to look at what areas of improvement are actually practical for us. And that might look like, oh, you know what? Like instead of my kid going out to lunch every single day, I'm sending them with a PB&J, a thing of fruit, a cheese stick, and a chopstick or something. And like it doesn't have to be overly complicated, but there are things that I think everybody right now listening to this can objectively look at their life and look at the consistent patterns and behaviors that they're exhibiting and their kids are exhibiting. And starting to slowly implement changes, not overhauling everything at once, but those are going to be the things that keep you healthy and fit and strong and, enjoying your life. But they're also going to be taking care of the kids, the people in your life, especially people, with this conversation we're talking around today, where you're on birth control, you're starting that. There's these exogenous sources of hormones that are at regulating your body. Nutrition, again, I would argue nutrition is important for every stage of our life, but especially that growing age for women in a lot of cases, that is when we have to take the shit even more seriously.
100%, 100%. And again, it's, you know, it's funny. I actually worked with a one of my youngest clients was a 16-year-old client, and she struggled a lot with her periods and with terrible hormonal and cystic acne. And I mean, oh my gosh, she just like she's glowing now, and it just makes my heart so happy. But it's so cool to see. She literally just messaged me last night, and she was like, I was I was in a class and we were talking about hormone health and everything. And I was answering all of the questions because I could rattle it off. And she was like, I just feel like I'm so much better fueled. Like she was a dancer. And it's just like, it's incredible to see the knowledge that, you know, they can retain and that they can practice in their own life whenever they are taught the proper items, right? But it's really sad to see that, again, like most school curriculums and most teenagers don't even know what the difference between a protein, fat, and carb is.
Yep, absolutely.
Crazy.
And I feel like that transitions nicely because there's going to be a lot of overlap for sure, but there's also a lot of differences too for someone starting birth control versus somebody coming off of it and making
For
that
sure.
transition for whatever reasons that they, choose to do that.
Yep.
If you don't mind sharing, what went into the decision for you, timing? What was the impetus for you to be like, I'm going to come off this, or this is something that I don't need, or like, was that a conversation you had with yourself or with a provider or with your partner or a combination of all these things? Like what was the impetus for you? And we can kind of go from there, but I'm curious what your experience was with that.
So my biggest one is, I did have a conversation with my partner who I am still with today, and it wasn't actually for me for fertility purposes at the time, but for many women it is. And so I think I like to always make this statement ahead of time that if you are somebody who is planning to come off of hormonal birth control to conceive, a lot of times the recommendations from doctors is just get off and start trying. But if I were to have come off of birth control trying to conceive, I would have been so disappointed and upset when I didn't have a period for 10 months, right? And I would have been like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my body? I should have started this way sooner. So I suggest coming off of hormonal birth control at least 1 year before you are planning to get pregnant so that you can start supporting your body and so that you can give your body time to regulate. Now, for me, it really was more so that notion, like I mentioned, like I remember reading, hey, my period is not a real period. And that just really kind of like stuck with me. And I also felt like I was at the time starting to get a lot of women who were transitioning off of birth control. And I was like, anything that I have my clients do, I'm always a guinea pig first. Like I always test it out on myself. I mean, of course, not always, everyone's different, but like most of the things, I want to be a role model for my clients. And so I was like, how can I, talk about the importance of, coming off of birth control when the time is right and, the impacts of birth control when I'm still on it, right? So I was like, I'm gonna come off. And, the thing is that I did know that there was a possibility that, I would start experiencing post-birth control syndrome, but I didn't think that it would be to the extent that I experienced it. Also because I was a seemingly quote unquote healthy person, And so that was kind of really the big item for me. Now I did obviously have a conversation with my partner around the fact that like we weren't ready for kids at the time. I'm still not a mother. And so, we are still very much so on the verge of if we do want children at some point. And so we talked about obviously like making sure that we were protected, utilizing like fertility awareness method, utilizing condoms if we needed, whatever it may be. So that was a really big conversation that we had. I'll be honest with you though, and I don't necessarily recommend this. I mean, anyone who is listening, I would have a conversation with your provider. I think that's a really important blanket statement to make before you're coming off of it. I personally didn't because I was already doing all of my own lab work, everything of that sort. So I felt very well versed in just being able to come off. I just finished my pack and I was done. But again, I think it's really important to have a conversation with your doctor first. But ultimately, the decision should be up to you.
Yeah, that's a powerful last sentence there where this should come to you. And I find that females get the short end of the stick a lot of times in terms of what the expectation might be in terms of like contraception methods, convenience of that. And at the end of the day, it's like you do a great job of this, but like giving women the power or having them feel empowered enough to make that decision for themselves instead of, relying on other people or partners or parents or whatever to make those decisions for them. I think it's a hard place to get to. And it's unfortunately something that you kind of have to experience on your own. And you've eventually get to a place where you're like, oh yeah, this maybe isn't serving me or this might look different without this and be better because of that. Like, that's the reality of this situation, but there's always trade-offs to fucking everything in life. And this is no different, but is a big decision. And especially for women's health, like people coming off and making that decision could be an extremely valuable experience. And I like that, you alluded to the fact that it wasn't a fertility reason as to why you wanted to
Yeah.
come off of it. And I think, again, giving people permission to do that. It's like you, if you're not trying to conceive, like you don't always have to be on birth control, and like
Right.
that permission to be able to make that decision for yourself, I think just goes missing a lot of times. So if anything, and even it's easy, sitting here as a guy and saying that who appreciates all my women, who's having a daughter, who has grown up around a lot of really strong women. I know a lot of, maybe other men or people might not feel the same way or have the same lived experience as myself, but just as a male speaking to a female audience today, it's like those are things that I want you guys to know. You need to make the best decision for you and not make the best decision for other people if you know that maybe there's something incongruent with that. So
Yes, 100%. And I think 2 points I just want to make is that number one, yes, it is still extremely important to have a regular period on your own, even if you don't want to get pregnant. Like ovulation is still extremely important for our health. And also, number two, yes, do not make or do not let anybody make you feel bad about the decision that you are making. I mean, this might be like getting a little bit personal, but I mean, I have had clients and women in my life who have had partners who have been very unsupportive of them getting off of birth control because they don't want to use a condom. And to that, I say, you gotta tell your man to either grow up or you gotta leave, okay? Because that's just crazy to me. So again, it really needs to be, you need to feel really secure in that decision.
agreed, agreed. And I just, I want to hit that point here because I think it's easy for us to sit here and talk about, oh, yeah, what you should do when you come off the pill when a lot of people might not be able to experience that on their own, And again, we're not the end all be all. We're not the ones making this decision for you. But again, I think hearing a lived experience like yourself and hearing those success stories are all things that I want people to take with them and appreciate and have that be an input when it comes to making the best decision for yourself. Because I feel like a lot of
For
people have a
sure.
very difficult time doing that. So
Yeah.
thank you for those things. And now, kind of talking about coming off of the pill for whatever reasons somebody might do that.
Yep.
There's an infinite list of what that might be and the reasons for that. What are some things, I guess, as someone sitting here, maybe taking hormonal birth control or some form of, contraception, like, and they don't know maybe symptoms or they've never heard of post-birth control syndrome,
Yes.
things that you would just bring awareness to, or, and not to say that it is going to happen, but what could happen if and when this process happens for somebody. I guess we could start there and just talk about like what to expect or expecting things that could potentially be a burden on people. I know people sitting here appreciate the fact that it's not all just roses and everything is fine after you come off, you get your period, as you've already alluded to. But what are some other symptoms besides maybe being irregular with your, menstruation cycle? Like, what are things that you experienced or things that people could potentially experience?
Yeah, I always say, prepare for the worst, hope for the best, right? So that's kind of what we're doing when we're coming off of birth control. So post-birth control syndrome is a very real thing. Don't ever let anyone tell you that it's not, because, I remember learning about it at around that time. And I was like, I cannot believe that nobody ever told me about this. And I will say that I have a lot of women who come off of birth control whose, practitioners will tell them, oh, you should just get, you should get your period back within like, 3-ish months. And then whenever it's 12 months down the road and their period's still not back and it's irregular, they're like, what's wrong with me? What's going on? And they go back to their doctor and their doctor's like, well, you should just get back on birth control then, right? And again, not helpful. So post-birth control syndrome is basically a collection of symptoms that can occur after stopping hormonal birth control. Some can come on rather quickly. For me personally, I saw mine start to onset within like the 3 to 8 month mark. And I would say that for most women, that's where it kind of happens. And so with post-birth control syndrome, a lot of times, whether or not you went on birth control to improve these symptoms, or like myself, if you didn't really have a lot of symptoms, and then you come off, sometimes we can see these symptoms arise. And a lot of times, I think it's helpful to understand the root and kind of like why these things happen in the first place. And I shouldn't even say the root because here's the thing. The hormone imbalance and the hormones aren't typically the root cause. There's usually something else underneath that that's influencing those hormones, right? Whether it be nutrition, GI health, liver, blood sugar balance, whatever it may be. But a lot of times the hormonal shifts that we're seeing while coming off of birth control very commonly are going to be number one, estrogen dominance, whether that be so we have two types of estrogen dominance. We have frank estrogen dominance, which is basically where our estrogen levels are clinically elevated, like they are high. Or we have relative estrogen dominance. So relative estrogen dominance is basically where we have our estrogen levels and they're actually not bad. They're not clinically high and they're just kind of chilling in a normal range. But we have our progesterone levels that are very low. And so that progesterone isn't really balancing out that estrogen well. And that is what we call relative estrogen dominance because that estrogen is technically high in relation to where progesterone is at. So relative estrogen dominance is more of a progesterone issue. And that leads me into a lot of times most women can see really low progesterone levels coming off of birth control. We are like millennial women are, and like Gen X, like we are a generation of deprived women whenever it comes to progesterone, because progesterone is that hormone that literally responds to all types of stressors in our life and in our body. I am somebody who has dealt with postmenopausal levels of progesterone since coming off of hormonal birth control. And to give you guys a little bit of, to put this in perspective a little bit, optimally, we normally like to see progesterone around like an 8 to 10 to a 19. My levels have consistently been at a 0.1 to a 0.3. So like I'm talking like barely there, barely there. And I'm not even 30 yet. I'm going to be 30 in 4 months, that's a really big thing that we can see. We can also see a surge in androgens at times. So we can see a surge, especially I've noticed this in women coming off of the IUD. So a surge in testosterone, in DHEA, but also at times we can see a suppression in testosterone. And that is because whenever we are on hormonal birth control, a lot of times we see that the liver starts to produce really high levels of something called SHBG, which is our sex hormone binding globulin. Really big term basically for a hormone that binds up testosterone. So we see really high SHBG levels whenever we come off, and then that binds up to testosterone, leaving us with tank testosterone, low libido, maybe some difficulty losing or building muscle. I can speak from personal experience to this as well. I remember getting labs after coming off of birth control. My SHBG was so clinically elevated, and my testosterone, free testosterone, was tanked. So those are some big things that we can see. At times, we may see a worsening of insulin resistance. And we can also see, like you said, Luke, the irregular and missing periods is going to be really big. Symptoms like weight gain, acne, hair loss, GI issues, mood swings, anxiety, breast tenderness can all be really, really common during this time. And I will say that one other thing that I see a lot of is an improper diagnosis of PCOS during this time as well. And the reason for that is because if we do, for some reason, have that surge in androgens, like surge in testosterone coming off of birth control, and then the doctor sees that, your period is irregular, they may diagnose you with PCOS, even though you might not have true PCOS. It may just be taking your body a little bit of time for those tests, for those androgens to come back down and that period to come back. So that's kind of what we call, quote unquote, post-pill PCOS, which is the only form of PCOS that is, reversible in a sense. So I would say that those are kind of some of the biggest things. Maybe two other ones would be like elevated inflammation markers, so like CRP levels, and also elevated liver enzymes. If you saw my liver enzymes post coming off of birth control, it was wild. It was crazy. So I think it's just crazy to me because it was such a lived experience for me, and I had all of the data right in front of me. So yeah, lots of different shifts that can happen.
Absolutely. And that was very thorough. And I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of maybe a female or somebody listening to this episode. And, we talk about this and things that could potentially happen. Again, none of these are guarantees. None of these things are
Exactly.
100% going to happen. Not all of these things somebody might experience all at once,
Yep.
either or all together. But again, acknowledging the fact that these things can exist and they can present, and that you are not broken if that's the way that you respond and your body's responding, is really the message that I want people to hear right now. Again, if somebody's sitting here and I'm like, yeah, maybe somebody's listening to this episode and they're like, holy shit, I was thinking about coming off the pill and now I just hear about fucking acne, digestive issues, and sleep disturbances, and low libido, and insulin resistance, and what is this relative estrogen dominance, and what my inflammation's going to go up, and my liver enzymes are going to be fucked up. Like, no, I'll just stay on the pill. And I think that's not the goal, but I think acknowledging these things, and there. We could have listed a list a mile long of potential symptoms that someone might feel starting the pill, or the symptoms before they started taking the pill. So it's not that this experience is independent of everything else and might lead to more symptoms. It's just the reality that we live in. And I just, again, want people to appreciate the fact that there's a lot of things that could happen. So the more you're aware of these things, just like going back to your question of like, how could you make someone more of an informed decision maker? It's knowing what could happen and how to prepare for that, and knowing how to respond to it, and also just having some grace and acceptance that, again, your body's not broken, and there's a lot of things that you can control coming off. And more likely than not, the experience that I've seen with women, my wife, with you, what I'm hearing is that experience has still been worth coming off of it and
100%.
and getting to a place where bone health and body composition and mental health and, just like hormonal things and changes that are happening, like the pros can and do likely still outweigh some of the shit that you got to go through in the interim. So I want to empathize with people because it is a lot and it is overwhelming. But it's not a death sentence, and it's something that you still have a lot of control over. So my next question is, knowing symptoms, knowing the possibility, knowing that this process might fucking suck for a lot of people, are there things that we could do to prepare coming off of it from a nutrition, lifestyle, habit standpoint, and continue that, or do more of that, or do unique things in addition to that once we get off of, off of the pill and we start to get month one, month two, month three from a generalized, and again, some people have the luxury and privilege of being able to do a Dutch test and be able to do all of these things and work with their provider. But from the person maybe is just thinking like, how can I do this on my own? And how can I have some action items to make sure I'm covering the basics here? What are the fundamentals that you would, that's a loaded question, but what are some things that you would recommend or at least draw some attention to?
And I think a lot of what I'm going to recommend preparing for is going to be the exact same as coming off of as well. So kind of going back to those pillars that I had talked about is I really have like five main pillars. And I do say that I typically like to start preparing my clients to come off of hormonal birth control, 3 to 6 months before they actually want to come off. But again, a lot of these pillars are already things that we're working on in one-on-one coaching, which is great, right? But if you're doing this on your own and you're like, man, where do I start from a basic standpoint? Number one, obviously going to be calorie intake, diet quality. So kind of everything that I had talked about, right? With the nutrient density, the healthy fats, I would say for a lot of clients, like whenever we are restoring hormonal function, and I also just want to go back a quick second too and just say that yes, I have had clients come off of birth control completely seamlessly, get their period back regular. I'm like, okay, what's it like to be God's favorite? But yeah, so again, every single experience is different and it's not a death sentence, right? But I will say that from like a an endocrine and like fat standpoint, a lot of times like clients' fat intake is normally around like 60 to 80 grams, because we really, really want a lot of those healthy fats in the mix. Those fibrous carbs are going to be really important, like in gram wise. And again, this is where it gets a little tricky because if we have somebody who is struggling with, insulin resistance, PCOS, whatever it may be, doesn't mean we have to go keto or low carb or whatever it may be. I've actually reversed a lot of clients' insulin resistance with having them eat more carbs, just focusing on a different type, right? But a lot of times, like, my clients are eating anywhere from like 170 to 270 grams of carbs, coming off of birth control. Again, some women might need a little less, a little more. With protein, we're focusing on anywhere from 1.4 to 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight if you're an active person. And again, lots of diversity through fruits and veggies, fiber. It's going to be really important. I've had a lot of women come to me and ask me, Do I have to eat, like, I've seen this blanket statement that you have to eat 2,500 calories to get your period back. Not true. Every single person's calorie intake is different, but I will say that it is so interesting. So there was actually a study done where, like, dropping calories to around 1,500 calories or lower disrupted the menstrual cycle within like 3 weeks, I think it was. And even a 15 to 25% reduction in calorie intake can also disrupt and or completely stop a menstrual cycle. So again, like focusing on fueling your body properly, I would say that 90% of the women that I work with probably need to eat more when coming off of hormonal birth control. But there are some who, if we are dealing with a lot of extra body fat, obesity, whatever it may be, we may need to eat a little bit less depending on, you know, what things looked like prior to coming off. So again, individualizing that to the person I think is so important. But like I tell people this all the time, you can't have one toe dipped in the fat loss pond and one toe dipped in the post-birth control pond. Like you gotta be all in. You gotta be all in. So if you want to regulate that cycle and ovulate regularly again, I would say that the second biggest thing, honestly, like I don't normally say that there are bigger things than nutrition, but stress, like I'm gonna be honest with you, probably really right up there with nutrition, stress, and sleep. And so I'm sure that you've talked so much about stress on here. I probably don't need to go into a massive tangent, but I will say this, that something that I really had to do for myself is a ton of inner work whenever I was going through this process and accepting my body where it was at, accepting the weight gain that I did go through, not only from hormonal fluctuations, but also just the fact that I had to increase my calorie intake and I was gaining weight, you know, to get a period back. And so really learning not even to like absolutely love myself. You don't have to love every part of yourself, but learning respect and acceptance for your body during this time is so huge. And I think monitoring your reactivity to stressors. So, you know, we can do all of the meditation, all of the breath work, which are all items that I implemented into my own routine, when coming off, but we can do all of those things and still be reacting really poorly to stress. So I think really managing that is so key. Sleep is going to be so huge. So making sure that we're sleeping, you know, 7 to 9 hours each night and minimizing blue light exposure before bed, making sure that we are getting in quality sleep is going to be massive. I also really decreased my caffeine intake. I mean, I was having an energy drink like every day, 200 milligrams. I cut that down to like 2 to 3 times per week. So that was a really big one for me. And I also think, too, it's just like learning how to say no and getting yourself out of stressful situations. Your body knows when you are not safe. Your body knows, like, it will withhold a period if it does not feel safe. So setting boundaries, saying no, that's going to be really massive. I would say my third pillar is exercise. So this is going to look really different for everyone. I think there's probably a nuanced conversation here around this could be a whole podcast in itself, you know. Do you need to cycle sync? No. Do you need to listen to your body's biofeedback signals and understand when you need to pull back and when you can push? Yes. You may need to pull back on training intensity a bit. For me, I pulled back from training 5 to 6 days a week to 3 to 4 days a week. I was training to failure. I pulled that back to training 2 reps in reserve. Doesn't mean I wasn't still training with intensity. I was just giving my body more time to recover. You know, you don't need to only do Pilates. You don't need to only do yoga. Like your body can handle the stress, and the stress of training is a good thing, right? But you may need to adjust the intensity and the frequency in which you're doing your training. And also, if you're somebody who's very sedentary, you may need to increase that as well. So again, really individualize there. And I think too, like in terms of cardio, I wasn't really doing any extra cardio. I was doing steps and that was pretty much it. But again, just kind of like really looking at your routine there and asking yourself, like if you're somebody who's, you know, strength training 6 days a week and then you're doing HIIT cardio on top of that or whatever it may be, the biggest thing I think, the biggest issue that we see with a lot of training or a high training frequency is underfueling. So you just have to make sure that like if you are training to that frequency, then you need to be fueling that properly. So I think that that is really, really massive. Any questions there before I keep going? Because I feel like I covered a lot.
You did. You did. And again, the thoroughness is much appreciated because I want the message to be that there are so many inputs to this that it's not one thing. When I think a lot of times the tendency for us is to think that if we control this one thing, it will improve outcomes in all other areas of our life. When in reality, it's just that's not the way this works, not how your health works, not coming off the pill works. It's not, you being the best version of yourself works. And there's always going to be so many inputs that go into this shit that we need to give the respected attention to all of these inputs to be able to see the best results that we can. Again, nothing is going to be
100%.
perfect, but I think when you list your pillars, again, those are pillars that, again, people can kind of nod their head in agreement with. It's like, okay, yeah, nutrition, sure. Stress, sure. Sleep, of course. Exercise and doing enough, but also not doing too much. Yeah, sure. There's a lot of things that sound simple on surface, but are very difficult to implement and are very important to, put at the top of the priority list if they are not already. And I'm happy you bring up the stress piece because the stress is, of course, something I've talked about a shit ton. And it's a lot of times it's very vague and it's very difficult to generalize this stuff. And a lot of things that people might identify with or not, but everybody's life looks different. But stress, I think, is one of the more important things because, especially if we have someone here who is coming off the pill to potentially try and start a family or in the trying to conceive phase of their life, stress is another thing that could make that process extremely difficult. And when you think
100%.
about all of the different forms of stress that can be inflicted on the body, some of the biggest ones, again, that I think most people can control are how much exercise or controlling the amount of exercise that we do in our nutrition. Like those really are things that we can put a lot of effort into that we can remove from our stress bucket instead of having those things add to our stress bucket. Because far too many times, those are other forms of stressors on people's lives, whether they're in a deficit or they're not eating high quality foods or they're eating kind of a traditional Western diet, or they're inconsistent with their eating routine, or they're doing fad diets, or they're going through the 75 hard challenge and they're fasting till noon every single day. It's like a lot of these things that you are going to do, that people are going to do, are likely going to go against what you've already told yourself or have always told yourself or what you're currently doing right now. And I think the thing that is the scariest for most for a lot of people is this unknown and this uncertainty and this fear of all of this shit that can happen. Again, I say can happen, not will happen, but things that could be detrimental, if you don't acknowledge that. And I think the stress piece is, I'm a huge fan of therapy. I'm a huge fan of personal work. I'm a huge fan of personal development. Again, what that means to each person is going to look different, but those are likely things that you have to conceptualize here that, hey, this is going to be different this time around. This is something that most people have never done before. And so we have to embrace this idea that we have to do things differently this time. We can't just try and overly restrict ourselves and do Orange Theory 5 days a week and just pretend that that's going to be good enough to keep our body weight the same and to have symptom-free, experience coming off of birth control. And just knowing that, I appreciate the fact that that's scary as fuck for a lot of people. And again, we're speaking especially to millennials, boomer, like fucking every female on this planet, honestly, where women especially are introduced to like exercise and nutrition and dieting as a means to be as thin as possible, at a very young age. You were called fat by a family member. Like this is deep rooted in a lot of people's history. And again, we're sitting here saying you might need to eat more, you might gain weight, you might need to cut back on exercise. You might need to do all of these things that are going against what you've always believed or have told yourself or have always feared of what the other side might look like. And this is a time where this stuff is even more important and more amplified. And you might be going in different directions and where you feel comfortable, but that is likely what it's going to take again for a period of time to be able to get to a place where you can actually be healthy as fuck again and where you actually can be at a place where you're proud of yourself and you can actually get to a place where you're feeling good and you don't have all these symptoms that you're constantly dealing with. And that's usually what it's going to take, but that's why this is so difficult and that's why I want people to appreciate the fact that it's not this take AG1 and you're going to be good, like you're
Oh my
going to
gosh,
be here. So I just wanted to say that because that's stuff that I've seen personally and I can't emphasize the stress piece and all the other shit that you listed too, but that's stuff that just we have to acknowledge that the psychological piece is likely the biggest limiting factor for a lot of people. The action items, the tangible stuff, the what questions of what calories and all this stuff, like that's the easy part, but it's getting
a
hump in the beginning. So thank you for that.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And, you know, as women, like we care. I mean, it's no surprise that like women are the most common, most commonly have like autoimmune issues, right? It's like we carry so much mental load. We carry so much emotion of everyone else around us. And we carry this burden of, you know, constantly having to be, you know, one way or another way or molding to what everyone else needs. And it's like, again, it is really scary to go about things in a way that you've been told not to do your entire life, right? Like you're telling me to move less and eat more. That is scary as shit, right? But I will say that as somebody who I actually just started OCD focus therapy this month. And, you know, something that my therapist told me was we have to get comfortable with the notion that certainty is not always a good thing, and that there can be beauty in the uncertainty as well, you know? So I think that that is so massive. And yeah, I would just say the last two pillars that I have are blood sugar balance and then your GI and liver. Blood sugar is going to be pretty self-explanatory. I mean, I'm sure you've chatted so much about that, right? But really just making sure that like meals are balanced. I always say you can't balance hormones without balancing blood sugar, right? So making sure we're not eating naked carbs, making sure that we're centering carbs around workouts is going to be really important. Getting meals after walks after meals. And GI and liver health, I would say, massive component of coming off of birth control, especially your liver. The pill is going to tax your liver. So I always say like making sure we're adding in liver supportive foods. So things like dark fruits, like berries, dark leafy greens, beets, dandelion root tea is great. Turmeric, all of those items are great. Drinking enough water, making sure that you're sweating. So using a sauna could be great. And also even adding in some helpful supplements as well. Like I would say if I had primary supplements that I would recommend coming off, it would probably be a quality multivitamin with active B vitamins and proper dosing, a quality omega-3, magnesium glycinate, NAC or N-acetylcysteine, which is a powerful antioxidant that really, really helps with detoxification. And then vitamin D3 plus K2 if you've gotten levels tested and you see that you're deficient. So I would say those are some really big items. And then along with GI health, I mean, really, it's going to be supporting that gut lining, supporting motility, making sure that we're chewing our food properly, slowing down at meal times, and also really making sure that, you know, if we do have underlying GI issues, like if we need further testing at some point, we can get it. We could do a GI map, whatever it may be, but also getting really real with yourself about like foods that don't agree with you as well. And that could be causing, you know, a lot of inflammation to our GI lining, whatever it may be. So I would say those are kind of like my big five pillars of some tangible things. But like you said, Luke, it's the mindset that gets most people. Like, and I really want that to be a big takeaway for most people here as well, is that if you can't learn to trust this process, even when it gets so freaking uncomfortable, because it will get so uncomfortable at a certain point for some of you, if you can't keep moving forward and you keep doing the same old thing that you've been doing, you're going to get the same result that you've been getting, right? And so we're here to keep growing, keep moving forward. And what I found is that a lot of times you do have to swing from one end to the, of the spectrum to the other to kind of like find your definition of balance. You know, like I've been the super restrictive person, and I've also been the person who really had to let go of the reins and gain weight and be okay with it to find my middle ground of where I'm at now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm happy you bring up just like the internal health, blood marker stuff, liver, you know, there's a lot of organs at play here that are really important, and taking care of your organs just means taking care of your health in general. And going back to the nutrition pillar, like eating enough meals and eating enough calories and getting diversity and having enough fiber, like a lot of these things are things that are going to take care of your gut, things are going to take care of your liver. If you do these things consistently, you're probably going to, you know, balance your blood sugars and have all of these things. Just feel like you're not micromanaging every different system in your body, but a lot of it is just general basic things that we do consistently are going to cross a lot of the, check boxes off this list that we're trying to think about and trying to prioritize every day. And speaking on that, I have, from a liver health standpoint, I had Andy DeSantis on the show. He's been on 3 times and we've done a 3-part liver series. So people listening, go listen to that. I've also had probably 3 or 4 blood sugar types conversations with diabetics and also just, balancing your blood sugars and health in general. So there's a lot of resources. We don't have to dive into those individually today, but again, appreciating all of these things and appreciating that if you can kind of take care of a lot of this stuff, you're giving yourself a really good chance to maybe be asymptomatic, but also have improved symptoms, which is really what we're trying to do, is just symptom management and making sure we're feeling better and also making improvements so this isn't your current reality forever.
Absolutely. I think that's so huge.
I am looking at the time and it is well above the hour, and that is crazy.
We could talk about this for hours, I
I know.
swear.
Do you want to cap it there? Do you want to talk for 10 more minutes about one more thing?
I'm good to
Body
go,
count. Do you
however
want?
long.
I am too. So I think it's this
Might as
conversation again,
well.
it's flowing very well, and I want to talk about something else because I constantly struggle with this because as a coach, as a dietitian, as somebody who communicates health education and helps people reach their body composition goals, and people coming on this podcast listening to this, and you listen to this conversation, and I suspect some people might take away that we're dismissing body comp goals, or we're
Yeah,
dismissing the fact that that
100%.
shouldn't be a priority, or that shouldn't be something people care about. And there's truths in and around some of that statement I just made, but that is not true. And that's not what we're saying. And I don't want people to feel that we have to completely ignore the way we look in pursuit of other things. Ironically, taking care of a lot of these things can help take care of or lead to good, positive improvements in our body composition, our health, and how we feel, and yada, yada, yada. So, but I really don't want people to sit here and think, okay, I have to not think about the way my body looks, and I got to be completely okay with potentially gaining 20 pounds when I come off the pill in a year. That's not true. And I want people to know that. And I think people can appreciate that sentiment. I want to talk to the person because this is likely everybody, because we all care about the way we look and we all want to feel good and we all want to feel confident. And for a lot of people, that is an external thing, or can be an external thing, of like how they fit in clothes and how they wear the bikini and how they fit in the wedding dress. Like that is a very real want and need and desire. And that's likely not something that's going to go away. Intent we have pursuing that can change from person to person and be more destructive or productive. But going into this last section of like, how do we handle the body composition side of things? How do we handle that pursuit aspect, at least of that. And how can we keep that in the back of our mind, or appreciate the fact that maybe we're going through different seasons? Like, what are we saying to the person who really does care about that? And I know you've gone through your own version of this, but how can we acknowledge that these two goals do exist and there is overlap, but there is definitely, if we're looking at a Venn diagram, there's so many different things in either things that I loved your analogy. Like, we can't dip our toe into the post, birth control type of life versus the complete fat loss all the time type of life. How do we meet in the middle a little bit more, or how can we conceptualize timelines in terms of what's most important? What could we do now that might set us up later? Like, what's this conversation like, and how can we talk people kind of off the edge who might be really stressing about letting their body go, quote unquote, or see something they might not like? Like, where does that conversation start for you?
So for me, it is always about what is most important to the client and what is their goal, right? But it's also about us as a coach figuring out, okay, is this a realistic goal for the client, right? And really making sure that we map out what is going to be realistic for them. I always like to use, I call it like the triangle of awareness. So on each little side, so say that one point is our like functional health, another point is aesthetics, and then another point is performance, right? Whenever we are focused really heavily on one piece of that triangle, typically the other two, there does have to be a little bit of falling to the back burner in a sense. It does not mean that we are completely disregarding them, right? And so we have to think about the fact that whenever we're solely focused on fat loss, that does, in a sense, impact our performance in the gym. And it does impact internal health in the sense that, we're impacting metabolic health, thyroid, all of that kind of stuff, sex hormones, right? So we can't ignore that. But what I always say is that we are kind of like doing all of these things in the background to maintain each of those pieces while we have our finger on the trigger of like this one specific goal that we have, right? So, for example, if we're coming off of birth control and we're still really trying to focus in on our body composition goals, right? We are still focusing on diet quality, which we know is going to reflect in, inflammation, in what our physique is looking like to some extent. We're also still focusing on proper macronutrient ratios, right? We're eating enough protein and we're focusing on movement in a way that still feels good for us and that's still conducive for us, right? So a lot of times, like my women who are coming off of birth control are still strength training. And I actually really like to have them put the focus on, hey, this can be a period where we really try focusing on more muscle growth, right? And so that whenever we get to that period of fat loss, cutting, whatever you want to call it, we are actually in a better place and we feel even better about our body composition. Now, does that always happen? No, because sometimes the person might not be recovering from the training that well whenever they're going through this. But we're always kind of like looking at these different pillars and asking ourselves, okay, like even though we're really focused on this one thing right now, what can we still do that feels realistic for us and that our body can recover from to make sure that we're kind of like bolstering ourselves along the way, right? Like we are setting ourselves up for resiliency so that whether we're focused solely on, aesthetics or performance or health or whatever it may be, whenever that's the primary focus, we still have those other things coming into play. But also being very realistic with clients about the fact that there are going to be some things that we do have to let go of the gas pedal a little bit with, especially when coming off of birth control. And if we know that we can't be in a fat loss phase right now, giving them, I find that giving them a roadmap and a timeline is really helpful. And I'm sure you run into this too. It's really hard to do because sometimes the body can be unpredictable, right? But from my knowledge of working with many women post birth control, I can typically give them a timeline of like, hey, this is what's going to happen. We're going to come off. We're going to get labs around this mark. We're hoping to see our period start to regulate by this mark. And then once we get that regular period, 4 to 6 regular periods in a row, we can go ahead and get into that fat loss phase, right? But it's so different for every single person that they just kind of gotta, as my therapist said, sometimes you gotta let go of that uncertainty, right? So, but I think that's really big, and I empathize with people so much on the body composition side of things, because if I'm being honest with you, I mean, that is something that I have struggled with since coming off of birth control, is the fact that, and I want anyone listening to know that like your body is not broken, and this can be a very real situation that typically, whenever I go into any sort of fat loss phase, even after spending a long time at maintenance, my period starts to dysregulate and gets irregular. And man, is it frustrating, because I'm like, I'm 5 foot. I just want to maintain a body composition that I feel good at without having to lose my period. And why the heck can't I do that, right? And so I do still want to really be open about that like every single person's journey is going to look different. And what might be a stressor to your body is a stressor to somebody else's, right? So just because this person came off of birth control, got their period back, and was able to lose body fat doesn't always mean that you're going to be able to do it in the same timeline.
Yep, well said. Very well said. I think one thing I heard overarching this whole theme is like nothing is permanent, like there's not
It's temporary. Yes. I feel like that's something that I needed to say right at the top, is like, that's something I remind all of my clients, is that you have to remember that these phases are temporary and like we're not robots, right? Like our body goes through seasons, and we do have to learn to have that almost that radical acceptance,
Yeah, exactly. And, God forbid, again, it comes back to mindset and how we think and how we talk to
Literally.
ourselves and, what these kind of, previous kind of misconceptions we have or previous mindsets we've had. A lot of that is exacerbated sometimes if we're not willing to change that or think differently or reframe situations. And what I appreciate about this whole conversation is like it really emphasizes the importance of periodization, because we do it with training, but
Yes.
with nutrition as well, and with your body composition. And I think everyone listening to this conversation right now, it's like you will not pursue fat loss for the rest of your life. That is not the goal. Some
Exactly.
people are always thinking about fat loss, whether they're executing on that or not is a conversation for a different day. Sometimes they're not, or maybe they are. And when they're not doing that, then they're, okay, this is where we see this yo-yo dieting or this kind of this all or nothing mentality kind of pick up speed a little bit in people's lives. But this is a very difficult time if you don't have those things. Not that you have to have everything perfectly in check, but if you're not aware of those tendencies and if you can appreciate what this season of life can bring you, again, it's going to make fat loss potentially easier next time because you're in a better starting spot. You learned a lot, because I think this is an opportunity where you can actually learn to appreciate of what it feels like to eat enough consistently, or what it feels like
For
to live
sure.
maintenance, or what it feels like to actually hit your 14 grams of fiber per every 1,000 calories you eat, and how much fun and effortless and flexible you can be sometimes by actually allowing yourself to eat more and also
There's
just
so much
appreciating.
beauty in this phase.
Yeah. And I think people don't give that enough credit. And for me, the biggest victory that I can have as a coach is getting people to a place where they're appreciating maintenance so much they don't look forward to cutting anymore. And this is a perfect time to practice that. Same with like trying to conceive, same with being pregnant, same with, nursing. Like there's a lot of domino here that women can experience that again could just be a huge reality check and a very big kind of identity crisis if they've had this lean body and they have all these symptoms. And before you know it, it's like they come off the pill, they feel like shit, they're not doing anything with their nutrition, their life is completely different. Then they start trying to conceive and then they start to get pregnant. And before you know it, it's been this like year, 2 year stretch where they're not doing anything that's reflective and their bodies change completely. And again, if you don't have this place of, like you said, acceptance or appreciation for where this season of life fits into the grand scheme of your life, like that is going to freak the fuck out of people. And again, it's not that it's inevitable, but there's levels to this and there's different severity. I don't know if severity is the right word, but there's a spectrum of how little or how much we could focus on this stuff, and we got to find a place that's conducive to your life and your preferences and what's worth it to you. And again, people just have these arbitrary weight loss goals, or they want to look like the fitness influencer, and they're not taking into consideration if that's even practical genetically, environmentally, like if you're willing to do those things. And it's this disconnect between what people think they want versus what they might actually need or what they're actually willing to do. And when we can get people on the same page of timelines, practicality, what we can learn, how we can periodize this stuff, I find it's those conversations up front that we have before we start these things, ideally, or at least in addition or alongside this process that people are going along. That's when you see the mindset take care of everything else. Everything else becomes a little bit easier because we're not constantly battling all of these frustrations, I guess, that can be expressed when we're going through this stuff.
And I always say, an educated client is a successful client. And when they can understand the plan and understand, the what, the why, and the how, like why are we doing the things that we're doing, and what is the growth that we can get out of this season, and what's the beauty in this season, that genuinely makes all the difference.
100%. Yep, 100%. I feel like that's a good little thing to end on there. We still didn't even get through all the things on my list, believe it or not. People are looking at their clock right now. They're like, "Geez, what the hell happened just now?" We'll bookmark part two and kind of continue this conversation and talk about
Yeah,
the other
seriously.
stuff. But this was incredibly helpful. I learned a lot. I know the audience will take away a lot of things, and this was a really fun and special episode because I work with women. I see the impacts that a lot of these things could have on women. I see their experiences. I live with a bunch, I live with women. I've grown up in proximity to a lot of amazing women that have all had their own experience with this stuff. So I think I've been fortunate enough to be a observer in a lot of these things and to try and practice that and to be able to empathize. And the goal of this conversation today, selfishly, was for me to learn more about a lot of this stuff, but also to have a conversation centered around things that can make people feel seen and can make men appreciate the fact that their lives likely and are very different from their partners or from their daughters or from their friends. And again, everyone's running their own race here. This isn't a comparison thing, but I just want people to appreciate the fact that we're all different. And, this type of stuff is very real in women's life. And we need to talk about it a little bit more because that's
Yeah.
ideally going to make their lives easier and more enjoyable and make this whole health and fitness pursuit, a fuck ton easier, alongside that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate your just openness to it and your knowledge that you've brought to this conversation as well, and just, again, the nuance around it and just like the respect that you have for the conversation as well. I absolutely love it, and I think it's been so productive, and I really hope that, everyone listening can just take even just one little nugget away, whatever it may be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've been super generous with your time, so I appreciate you for that. Tell the people where they can find you. Anything you want to plug, please say it all. I'll link everything in the show notes as well. But yeah, tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Amazing. Yeah. So I am on social media on Instagram and TikTok as Karagoss_RD. I do have a free Facebook group. We put tons of resources in there. We go live every week. That is Functional Fat Loss Secrets for Women on Facebook. I also have a website. It is KaragossRD.com. And I also do have my own podcast. I am currently on hiatus, planning tentatively to bring it back in 2025, but that is called Not Your Quick Fix Podcast, and you can find that on Apple and Spotify as well.
Thank you, Kara. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.